Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. Today, we open with some wonderful news for East County residents and arts lovers across our region on a deal being forged with Live Nation, the world's largest entertainment management company, and the City of El Cajon to finally reopen the long-shuttered East County Performing Arts Center. We'll also have an update on the countywide emergency declaration due to the hepatitis A outbreak and what some East County communities stricken with the disease are doing to help protect public health. Border wall prototypes are breaking ground in San Diego, and authorities are taking steps to prevent violent clashes among protesters. Get details on today's show. Our reporting team at East County Magazine has done it again, with 101 awards already under our belt. Six of our journalists are on the winner's list for awards in San Diego Press Club's Excellence in Journalism Award. On Green Scene, learn about a bill signed into law by Governor Jerry Brown to protect and enhance the San Diego River Park, and who was the only legislator to vote no on this important measure from our region. A shelter in East County is asking for public help to assist formerly homeless women with donations of shampoo, soaps, and other toiletries. President Donald Trump may soon have to release his income tax returns, if he wants to run for re-election in California, that is, and we'll tell you why on today's show. Sports fans and students may soon have something to cheer about, a ballot measure that could transfer the stadium to San Diego State University for a multi-use stadium, as well as educational and research facilities and a river park. A new federal bill could bring some much-needed funding to help fight wildfires in western states, and we'll have details from Public News Service today. A new county grand jury has been seated, and you might be surprised to hear about the diverse backgrounds of its members. Legendary boxing champion Archie Moore's son was in El Cajon recently as part of a national campaign to help at-risk kids. Learn more later today. Spring Valley is getting a new park, and we'll tell you how you can have your ideas heard at a public meeting that's coming up soon. The sun is shining, the weather is crisp and cool, and it's a great time this weekend to head out for some of East County's biggest festivals of the year. From beer and bratwurst at Oktoberfest at La Mesa in El Cajon, to upcoming events such as the Ramona Air Fair, the Borrego Days Desert Festival and Parade, Kids Care Fest, and the Laguna Mountain Rendezvous, we'll have lots of choices for you and your family on our Destination East County segment later on today. Then, from Public News Service, we'll have some top national news, including efforts to bring aid to Puerto Rico after Hurricane Maria, the latest healthcare story, and a tariff that could dim the bright future for the U.S. solar industry. On sports, Liz Alper has a report on reactions across professional sports leagues to Donald Trump's demand that the NFL stop players from kneeling during the national anthem to protest treatment of Black Americans. And finally, we'll be re-airing one of our Best of East County episodes, taking you on the road to the Desert View Tower in Hukumba Hot Springs, one of East County's quirkiest and most endearing roadside landmarks. So stay tuned for all of these stories on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
This is Gene Carpenter with a special report from El Cajon. The world's largest live entertainment producer may soon be managing the East County Performing Arts Center, which could be open for shows starting in late 2018 or early 2019. In February, the City Council authorized City Manager Doug Williford to commence negotiations. At Tuesday's council hearing, council heard a report by Williford, which was greeted positively by all council members. The council expects to ratify a final contract in the near future. Live Nations operates nearly 200 venues in 7 countries, including successful local venues such as San Diego's House of Blues, and also owns Ticketmaster. Williford states, "There is no more professional or successful live entertainment group anywhere in the United States. If the contract is approved, the East County Performing Arts Theater will be marketed on a national level, bringing an influx of visitors to downtown El Cajon. The city will spend $5 to $6 million on upgrades, more than the $3.5 million previously estimated due to needing a new heating and air conditioning system, better concessions areas, sound and lighting equipment, and more. Williford says this investment is well worth the cost and notes that upgrading concessions will also increase revenues. Some of these costs have already been set aside for the theater improvements, including revenues from sale of the old police station site. Live Nation would be paid $375,000 a year to manage the theater with an option to renew for 2 more 5-year terms. The city would receive 100% of revenues, including money from ticket sales, rental revenues, concessions, and sale of items such as artists' t-shirts and memorabilia. The city would be responsible for operations and capital expenditures. Each year, Live Nation and the city will agree on a forecast for revenues and expenses. If Live Nation can bring in revenue above projections, it would receive a bonus, and the added revenue would be shared between the city and Live Nations. Once the jewel of the arts community in East County, the theater fell into disrepair and was closed in 2009 during tough budgetary times. Now, Live Nation seeks to reopen it and utilize both the indoor and the outdoor space between ECPAC and the City Hall, serving alcohol both places. Live Nation would book events such as performing arts, cultural events, musical acts, film showing, and comedy shows. The company would book at least 50 events the first year and at least 65 by year 5. The city would adopt a day fee based on industry standards in the San Diego area, so the cost to use the theater, even for nonprofits, would be higher than in the past. In addition, only Live Nation equipment can be used, run by Live Nation employees. One downside is that some local organizations that once used the theater may not be able to afford the higher costs, so the city plans to set up a scholarship fund to help. The city plans to use some of its revenues to create scholarships to help nonprofit organizations afford to use the theater, and could also allow some groups to use the theater on some of the days designated for the city to use the theater without having to pay a user or rental fee. Efforts to sell naming rights to the theater will also be made, with the city and Live Nation splitting any naming rights revenues. For theater fans across East County, news of the impending reopening of the long-shuttered East County Performing Arts Center is being greeted with enthusiasm, the first new theater season in a decade, and the opportunity to once again shout, Bravo!
This is Valerie Watts with a health report. San Diego County's hepatitis A outbreak continues to spread. This week, supervisors extended the public health emergency declaration after another death, bringing the death toll to 17. A total of 461 cases have been reported, and 315 of those people, nearly three-fourths, have been hospitalized. East County now has numerous cases. El Cajon has installed hand-washing stations and power-washed areas where homeless people congregate, since most of the cases have involved the homeless or IV drug users. 11 cases have been reported in Santee and 8 in La Mesa, with cases reported in all local cities and the unincorporated areas. Santee officials have been disinfecting public restrooms and picnic shelters on a weekly basis, also cooperating with city officials to place hand-washing stations in 3 City of San Diego parks along the San Diego River, where the homeless congregate. La Mesa officials say their city's crews are sanitizing La Mesa's public restrooms, 10 of which are open 24 hours. Vaccination information is also being distributed to those considered at risk. The county's Health and Human Services Agency and the local healthcare community have given 42,000 vaccinations since the outbreak began. Just over 22,400 of them have been given by local healthcare systems, community clinics, and pharmacies in the county. Another 15,660 of them have been given through mass vaccination events, mobile vans, and over 325 foot teams that have hit the streets to target the homeless population. Sanitation efforts are also increasing. There are 66 hand-washing stations placed around the county, with the majority in the city of San Diego. Another 100 are on the way. The county has also distributed over 4,400 hygiene kits to the at-risk population. The kits include hand sanitizer, cleansing wipes, bottled water, a waste bag, and information on preventing hepatitis A. In conjunction with the County Department of Environmental Health, an extensive education campaign is ongoing with food handlers and restaurants. There are also targeted vaccinations events for food handlers. Public health officials have also made over 100 community presentations on the outbreak.
Construction of 8 border wall prototypes is now underway in Otay Mesa. Each prototype will cost up to $500,000. After testing of alternative materials and designs built here, President Donald Trump aims to erect a wall along the entire 2,000-mile-long U.S.-Mexico border at a cost of some $60 billion. It is unclear why San Diego was chosen for the prototypes, and many local officials have raised concerns. San Diego City Council voted 5-3 to pass a resolution opposing the entire border wall, stating it would harm tourism and the environment. Port of San Diego Vice Chairman Rafael Castellanos, testifying at the council meeting, predicted the project may come to be viewed as, quote, the worst pork barrel project of all time. Supervisor Diane Jacob has questioned why the prototypes are being built in San Diego. She stated, "This is a divisive time in our nation's history, and frankly, we already have a border fence in San Diego, so I'm not sure why we were targeted to build the prototypes, but it is what it is today." On Tuesday, supervisors voted to ban items that could be used as weapons, including baseball bats, rocks, and knives, from areas near the prototypes where the protests are anticipated. U.S. Border Patrol Chief Agent Roy Villarreal stated during a press briefing at the groundbreaking for the prototypes, "We expect that there may be protesting, and we're going to do everything to make sure that we provide that opportunity and maintain civility and lawfulness along the border here," Times of San Diego reported. 4 prototypes will be made of concrete and 4 of other materials. They will range from 18 to 30 feet tall, and all are being built and designed by out-of-state companies. Villarreal called the groundbreaking a significant milestone, adding that the construction of prototypes will help identify the best way to build new and replacement infrastructure along our border before we make more investments. He called border security an achievable objective through a combination of technology, infrastructure, and law enforcement personnel. California Attorney General has filed a lawsuit in San Diego on behalf of the state and the California Coastal Commission. The suit seeks to halt construction of the wall, arguing that it is illegal because Homeland Security would waive 37 federal laws and additional regulations, also violating state and local laws to build the wall, the Attorney General says. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Goetz.
6 of East County Magazine's reporters are on the winner's list in the San Diego Press Club's Excellence in Journalism Awards. Congratulations to our reporters Jonathan Goetz, Rebecca Jeffress-Williamson, Paul Cruz, Mimi Pollack, Rachel Williams, and editor Miriam Raftery. Now, Press Club lists only the names of winners, so we don't yet know what exactly won, or the placements. Also, a couple of these writers entered works for more than one media outlet, but it's clear that East County Magazine will once again have multiple winning entries, boosting our total of 101 journalism awards even higher. Our entries this year spanned a broad variety of topics, including our coverage of the Alfred Olongo shooting, efforts to reopen the East County Performing Arts Center, the aftermath of the border fire, Syrian refugees in East County, wildlife rescue organizations, collapse of a wind turbine in Ocotillo, ethics issues involving local elected officials in both political parties, and First Amendment freedoms. The awards gala will be held on October 24th at the Jacobs Center. Good luck to all of our entrants. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, in the heart of San Diego's East County.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Jonathan Goetz with the Green Scene Report. Governor Jerry Brown has signed Senate Bill 214, legislation authored by San Diego State Senator Tony Atkins, to strengthen the San Diego River Conservancy's ability to protect and enhance historic, cultural, and natural resources along the 52-mile San Diego River. The measure also gives local tribes a voice in decisions involving the San Diego River watershed. East County's State Senator Joel Anderson voted against the bill, while the rest of the San Diego County delegation, Republicans and Democrats, voted in favor of the landmark bill to enhance recreation, protect and restore the environment along the river. Anderson has a history of taking hefty contributions from development interests. SB 214 builds upon an earlier measure authored by Adkins in 2015 that made the San Diego River Conservancy a permanent entity. SB 214 adds representation from the City of Santee and the Kumeyaay Diaguino Land Conservancy to the San Diego River Conservancy's Board of Directors. It also provides the Conservancy with greater ability to enter into joint power agreements. Senator Adkins says, "The San Diego River is a rural and urban waterway running from Julian to Ocean Beach that remains undiscovered by many local residents and visitors alike. We must continue to enhance public access to the river and protect its entire 440-square-mile watershed." She adds, SB 214 adds new tools to the toolbox and bolsters efforts along the eastern portions of the river by bringing to the table our partners from Santee and tribal reservation land. The San Diego River Conservancy is also slated to receive $12 million from a major parks and water bond that will be placed on the June statewide ballot next year, pending the governor's signature on SB 5, which passed the legislature earlier this month. Meanwhile, still on Governor Brown's desk is SB 667, another bill backed by Adkins that aims to improve California's waterways. That measure would create a riparian stewardship program to provide technical assistance with planning, design, construction, and project evaluation to organizations seeking to enhance or restore waterways in their communities, reduce flood risk, improve habitat or public access. SB 667 appropriates no money, however, it would be a candidate for funding under the Parks Bond.
The East County Transitional Living Center, a shelter helping homeless women to get off the streets and overcome addiction, has an urgent need for donations of toiletries such as shampoo and conditioner, bath soap or body wash, deodorant, toothpaste, razors and shaving cream, toilet paper, and feminine hygiene products. These women are working on transforming their lives from homelessness into self-sufficiency, Mary Moran told East County Magazine, adding, "They are making great progress." If you would like to help, you can donate women's toiletry items at the East County Transitional Living Center, which is located at 1527 East Main Street in El Cajon. The organization is nonprofit and donations are tax deductible. For more information, you can visit loveectlc.org. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Valerie Watts.
Donald Trump is the first president in modern times who did not release his tax returns. But if he wants to be on the ballot for re-election in 2020, he may soon have to make his tax documents public. Senate Bill 149 is currently on Governor Jerry Brown's desk awaiting approval. It would require all presidential candidates to release at least 5 years of their income tax returns to appear on the ballot in California. Trump claimed he wasn't releasing his tax returns due to an IRS audit, but the IRS later said that an audit does not prevent a person from releasing their returns. Open government advocates say that releasing tax returns is important so that voters can identify potential conflicts of interest, such as Trump's business enterprises, as well as potentially any income from foreign interests that might have an influence on presidential decision-making. Though Senate Bill 149 passed with overwhelming Democratic support, there is no guarantee that Governor Brown will sign it, since Brown declined to release his own tax returns during his last two gubernatorial campaigns. Even if he does sign it into law, the bill is expected to be challenged in courts, and several other states have already signed similar measures into law. The U.S. Constitution requires only that presidential candidates be at least 35 years old and be natural-born citizens who have lived in the U.S. for at least 14 years. On the other hand, states can and do set their own requirements for procedures required to be on the ballot. And advocates argue that releasing tax forms is within a state's purview to require in order for voters to make informed judgments. Presidents of both parties have willingly released their tax returns for the last 40 years, the bill's author, Senator Mike McGuire, says, adding, "Transparency is a bipartisan issue." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
With the Chargers gone, friends of SDSU have announced a ballot initiative to transfer the former Qualcomm Stadium to San Diego State University. It would become the SDSU West Campus Research Center. Plans would be developed with public participation, though they include a joint-use football stadium at no cost to taxpayers, as well as 34 acres of public parkland along a to-be-revitalized section of the San Diego River. It could also include educational, research, and technology programs within a vibrant, mixed-use campus, village, and research center. The website states at sdsus.org. The plan allows for inclusion of other potential sports partners, which might include professional or another soccer team, and be adaptable for the NFL if San Diego ever gets another football team. Friends of SDSU is described as a coalition of SDSU alumni, business, and community leaders. San Diego State has had limited expansion ability in recent years due to lack of land near the existing campus, and the city's plans to close the Mission Valley Stadium site next year would negatively impact the Aztecs who play there. Under the plan, the city would not be responsible for any stadium upgrades, operating costs, demolition, maintenance, or other expenditures, although the city could lose potential revenues from the site in the future. The measure will be out for signatures to place it on the ballot 21 days after a notice of intent is published this Saturday. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
A rare moment of bipartisanship is catching on among Western states' members of Congress with a bill to treat wildfires more like other natural disasters. The Wildfire Disaster Funding Act has the support of congressional delegations from Idaho and other Northwest states. Its introduction is timely, as the cost of fighting wildfires in 2017 has already exceeded $2 billion, the most expensive year on record. Government agencies aren't allowed to tap disaster funding to fight these infernos. Will Whelan with the Nature Conservancy in Idaho says this bill would change that.
When we have a particularly severe fire season, the Forest Service and the other public land agencies will be able to access funds available for paying for disasters. And that will help them stabilize their budgets for managing the public's lands.
Whelan says fires have grown more severe in the last few decades, and the Forest Service budget reflects this. In 1995, 15% of its budget went to fighting wildfires. Today, it is 55%, despite the fact that the agency's budget hasn't grown overall. Each year, Congress appropriates money to fight fires on public lands, and that number is based on a 10-year average of firefighting costs. John Roberts is a wildfire mitigation forester in Boise County, the rural county where nearly 190,000 acres of forest land burned in last year's Pioneer Fire. He says the Forest Service has some great tools for fighting fires.
They can get out on the landscape and make a landscape area, forested area, less susceptible to wildfire and more able to control a wildfire. But they can't do that if they're spending all their money fighting the wildfires that they could have prevented if they could do those other things.
Whelan says Idaho has more than 20 million acres of national forest lands that provide Idahoans with water, recreation, and in many cases, a living.
All of those benefits depend on good stewardship, and that's what's at risk as an increasing share of the National Forest Service budget goes to fire suppression. So we need to stabilize the budgets of the agencies that are taking care of our public lands.
For Public News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
The county grand jury has named new members for 2017 and 18. It will be chaired by Jeff Bryson, a retired San Diego State University psychology professor. The jury members, 6 women and 13 men, were drawn by lot from 90 volunteer applicants. They will serve for 1 year under a state constitution mandate that counties must establish the full-time watchdog panels to look into the workings of city and county governmental agencies. The members of this year's grand jury come from a vast variety of occupations and life experiences. Among them are college graduates in such specialties as literacy for children, neurology, philosophy, business administration and foreign trade, teaching and education administration. Others have postgraduate degrees in education, Spanish, public administration, business administration, industrial organizational psychology, European integration, and physics. The military is represented by former active duty servicemen, including a captain in the United States Navy, a retired U.S. Army colonel, a former 82nd Airborne Division paratrooper who served in Germany after World War II, and a retired commanding officer of an F-14 squadron and carrier air wing. 2 members are attorneys. 1 is an immigrant from the Middle East who became a longtime worker in the San Diego County Registrar of Voters office. Rounding out the panel are a specialist in medical devices, a pediatric neurologist, a police analyst in energy, environment, natural resources, and industrial competitiveness. a newspaper reporter and copy editor, a credit manager for a national corporation, a communication and computer science expert for the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, ICE, and Border Patrol, a supervising probation officer, a deputy district attorney, and a deputy public defender. Chairman Bryson says, with such a diverse panel, I hope that we can bring creative, lasting solutions to the challenges facing San Diego County. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
Archie Moore was the longest reigning world light heavyweight champion of all time from 1952 to 1962. He also trained other boxing greats, including Muhammad Ali, James Tillis, and George Foreman. Now his son, Billy Moore, a San Diego resident, is carrying on the family's boxing tradition as president of the ABC Youth Foundation, which stands for Any Body Can. The foundation runs boxing and youth enrichment programs, as well as a campaign to gather 1 million punches to punch out racism, gang violence, and mistrust of the police. Earlier this month, that campaign came to the Heartland Fire and Rescue Department Station 6 in El Cajon for a 2-day Million Punches from the Heart event. El Cajon's police and fire chiefs participated, along with many firefighters, peace officers, probation department staff, and the Cajon Valley School District superintendent. Around 135 students and the principal of Lexington Elementary School also joined in. One police cadet threw 911 punches, leading to shouts of, "Hey, Balboa!" a reference to title character Rocky Balboa in the movie Rocky. The novice boxers punched boxing bags for 60 seconds. Each of their punches was counted toward the 1 million goal. Lexington Elementary's principal, Jeremy Leisch, said, "This is a fantastic event. It's a great way to show the fire department and law enforcement in a positive light." San Diego County Probation Department's Deputy Chief, Lorraine Fernandez, spoke to the attendees. "We are really looking forward to referring more of our youth to ABC to keep them out of the system," she said. Billy Moore sees his mission as saving youths from gangs and training them to box through his foundation, which is headquartered on Market Street in San Diego. "We have kids that exceed in life and boxing," he said, adding that the foundation has a boxing gym and also teaches life skills. After the El Cajon event, Moore's Million Punches from the Heart campaign had amassed over 500,000 punches, halfway to his nationwide goal. Next up, he'll be heading to Kansas City, Missouri, taking his 1 Million Punches from the Heart campaign to America's heartland. To find out more about the campaign or Billy Moore's foundation, you can visit abcyouthfoundation.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Valerie Watts.
Spring Valley will soon be getting a new public park. Spring Valley residents are invited to a meeting to provide input on future amenities for the Ildica Street County Park. You can join staff from the Department of Parks and Recreation to provide your ideas for developing this just over half-acre parcel. The meeting will be held on Wednesday, October 4th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Spring Valley branch of the County Library on Kempton Street. Laura Lowes, Spring Valley Community Planning Group member, says this is our opportunity to give input to the county on our needs for a park at this site. "Inform your friends and neighbors of the meeting," she asks. Reporting in Spring Valley for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Valerie Watts
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County includes the La Mesa Oktoberfest, El Cajon's summer concert season finale, opening weekend of El Cajon's Oktoberfest, fall concerts at Cuyamaca College, and an art reception for Padre Johnson at Cuyamaca College.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including the Ramona Airfare and Fly-In, the Laguna Mountain Rendezvous, Kids Care Fest in Lakeside, the Borrego Days Celebration, El Cajon's Haunt Fest on Main, a Haunted Elks Lodge, a Halloween Harvest Family Festival on Mount Helix, a spooky sleepover at Lions, Tigers, and Bears in Alpine, and the Boulevard Boo Parade.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
Celebrating its 44th year, the popular La Mesa Oktoberfest will run from Friday, September 29th through Sunday, October 1st, bringing 3 days of Prost or cheer. In addition to live German music and other entertainment, many vendors and crafts, you can also enjoy a beer garden, serving up German and craft beers, plus new this year, craft cocktails. For more information, you can visit lamesaoktoberfest.org.
The German American Club of San Diego hosts its annual Oktoberfest at its headquarters on Mollison Avenue in El Cajon over 2 weekends, September 29th through October 1st and again October 6th through 8th. You can feast on authentic German fare from roast ox on a spit to German pancakes, sauerkraut, and bratwurst. A German band flown in from Bavaria will perform German music ranging from polkas and waltzes to beer drinking songs. You'll also find vendors selling a variety of crafts. For details, you can visit GermanClubSanDiego.org.
El Cajon's Dinner and a Concert series concludes this week with a season finale concert by the Mighty Untouchables. The concert is from 6 to 8 p.m. in Prescott Promenade Park. For more information, you can visit downtownElCajon.com.
The fall concert series at Cuyamaca College has 3 concerts lined up this week. On Monday, October 2nd, Kembag Sunda will perform traditional music from West Java. On Tuesday, October 3rd, the Camera Lucida Piano Trio will perform music by Mozart and Brahms. In addition, pianist Reiko Uchida will be joined by guest violinist and USC adjunct professor Cheyenne Chen for Sonata by Brahms. Then on Thursday, October 5th, the Cuyamaca College Choir, directed by Paul Infantino, will perform contemporary and standard choral works. For tickets and details, you can visit cuyamaca.edu/performingarts.
Heritage of the Americas Museum invites you to a reception with artist Padre Johnson on Friday, October 6th from 3 to 5 p.m. Padre Johnson will make a special presentation donating 25 paintings from his Faces of the Global Human Family to the museum for permanent display. The former Navy chaplain spent 14 years traveling around the world, living with people in 159 countries and capturing the common humanity in their faces. Now he has put together an exhibition of his amazing works reflecting cultures around the world. His works have been exhibited at the United Nations and the Royal Palace in China's Forbidden City. Johnston originally planned on gifting all of his paintings to the United Nations, but has since decided that they belong in the Heritage of the Americas Museum on the campus of Cuyamaca College here in East County, where he held his very first exhibition years ago. For more information, you can visit heritageoftheamericasmuseum.com.
Now for a preview of coming attractions.
Cool airplanes, vintage cars, live country music, and a hot air balloon are all part of the Ramona Airfare and Fly-In on Saturday, October 7th at the Ramona Airport from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Visitors will get the chance to get up close and look at vintage aircraft and classic cars. Kids ages 8 to 17 can take free flights with the Young Eagles. There will be a tethered hot air balloon for people to ride in. Plus, country and southern rock band Del Rio and the KSON team will entertain. There will also be games, free face painting, balloons and piñatas for children, and a pancake breakfast, Mexican lunch, and food trucks. Visitors can also tour the Classic Rotors Helicopter Museum, the U.S. Forest Service's Helitac Base, and the CAL FIRE Air Attack Base. For more information, you can check out the county's Ramona Airport webpage.
Step back in time to a fur trading and colonial camp from the 1700s to 1840s at the Laguna Mountain Rendezvous from October 13 through 22 at the Mattaguy Scout Reservation in Santa Isabel. You can see demonstrations of survival skills such as cooking, archery, tomahawk throwing, black powder shooting, and tool making. For more information, you can visit the Laguna Mountain Rendezvous page on Facebook.
Grossmont Healthcare District presents Kids Care Fest on Saturday, October 14th from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Lakeside Rodeo Grounds. This event will offer potentially life-saving healthcare screenings as well as dental and vision screenings at no cost, as well as safety demonstrations, flu shots, blood pressure and cholesterol checks, health information, plus fun activities such as pony rides and a rock climbing wall. For details, visit kidscarefest.org.
The 6th annual Haunt Fest on Main will be held October 20th from 5 to 10 p.m. in downtown El Cajon. This fun, family-friendly, Halloween-themed event features live music on the promenade stage, including the stand-up guys from 5 to 7:15 p.m. and the amazing 80s All-Stars from 7:45 to 10 p.m. This event also features costume contests on the Main Street stage, carnival rides, crafts, games, car show, a candy trail, kids zone with outdoor movies, face painting, inflatables for kids, pumpkin patch, Ghostbusters, and more. This event is presented by the City of El Cajon and the Downtown El Cajon Business Partners. Find more haunting details at hauntfest.org.
The 52nd annual Borrego Days Desert Festival kicks off Saturday, October 21st from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. and continues through Sunday, October 22nd from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. The Borrego Days Parade steps off at 10 a.m. on Saturday, October 21st, along Palm Canyon Drive and Christmas Circle in Borrego Springs, complete with pre-parade flyover, floats, marching bands, and trick-riding Western cowboys. Borrego Days also includes arts and crafts and a carnival fun zone for kids both days, plus live music for dancing under the stars on Saturday night. For more information, you can visit borregodays.com.
The El Cajon Elks Lodge 1812 is teaming up with Scare Ventures to present a haunted lodge for the community in their parking lot from October 26th through 31st. The haunted lodge will feature a maze and four different key scare areas for guests to experience, plus activities and booths. There will also be early evening hours set aside for children under 12 to experience a less scary version of the Haunted Lodge that is family-friendly for youngsters, where they will be treated to Halloween candy from nicer monsters they encounter as a part of their tour through the lodge maze. The Elks, who have been serving the community for 60 years, will donate 100% of proceeds from the event for children's charities. The lodge is located at 1500 East Washington Avenue in El Cajon. For advanced tickets, you can visit ElCajonElks.com.
The Mount Helix Park Foundation and the Grossmont Mount Helix Improvement Association are joining together for a fun-filled Halloween Harvest Family Festival at the top of Mount Helix Park for neighborhood families on Sunday, October 29th from 2 to 5 p.m. A costume parade for kids, live music by Lenny and the Lounge Lizards, plus booths from local businesses offering crafts, games, and treats will all be a part of this fall festival. Park at the San Miguel Fire Station on Vivera and take a free shuttle to the top of Mount Helix. For more information on the event, visit mounthelixpark.org.
Lions, Tigers, and Bears in Alpine will host its annual Spooky Camp Over from 3 p.m. Friday, October 27th until noon on October 28th. Bring your own pumpkin to carve, food, camping gear, and best costume. This event promises a wild and ghoulish night under the stars with the rescued animals. There will be pumpkin carving, s'mores, campfire songs, a costume contest, and animal feedings. For ticket prices and reservations, visit lionstigersandbears.org. All proceeds benefit the nonprofit facility's work to rescue exotic animals and provide a permanent home for them.
Celebrating its 13th year, the Boulevard Boo Parade will be held on Saturday, October 28th. Starting at 10 a.m., with over 70 entries of live entertainment marching on 1 mile of El Cajon Boulevard in the college area, the parade will entertain you with spooky ghouls, goblins, ghosts, and witches to fill you with the Halloween spirit. Grandstand seating is also available for purchase, or arrive early to stake out space along the parade route. The best viewing is along the south side of El Cajon Boulevard between Rolanda Boulevard and 60th Street.
That's all for this week.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, You can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County. See you around East County!
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
Welcome to the Public News Service Daily Newscast for Friday, September 29th, 2017. I'm Eric Tegedoff. In our rundown spotlight today, President Trump makes it easier to get aid to Puerto Rico. Experts fear Obamacare funding cuts could sabotage the health insurance program. And solar energy proponents warn tariffs would cost jobs. This and more ahead. After more than a week without power on the island, President Trump has opened up more lines of aid to Puerto Rico. The administration suspended a century-old shipping law known as the Jones Act for 10 days to facilitate assistance. White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders says the suspension was authorized at the request of the governor of Puerto Rico. This week, the Affordable Care Act survived another repeal effort in Congress, but behind the scenes, the federal government is making major cuts to its funding. Mark Richardson has more.
The Department of Health and Human Services has slashed the ACA's advertising budget and significantly reduced the grant funds for groups that assist people in signing up for health care, known as navigators. Melissa McChesney, a Houston-based consultant for the Center for Public Policy Priorities, says the Trump administration is trying to fulfill the president's claim that Obamacare is failing.
That will effectively undermine the ability for people to be able to know that the law is still in place and that coverage is still available, and therefore we're likely to see a reduction in enrollment.
The White House cut the ACA's advertising budget from $100 million to $10 million. According to McChesney, that will effectively eliminate most mass media advertising. She adds that because of recent unsuccessful attempts in Congress to repeal Obamacare, some people aren't sure the program still exists.
The solar energy boom, which was responsible for creating one in every 50 new jobs in the U.S. last year, could be dealt what industry advocates are calling a crippling blow if a proposal to impose tariffs on imported solar panels goes forward.
On the other hand, Tom Hunt with the Louisville-based Clean Energy Collective says if the Trump administration decides not to impose tariffs, some 88,000 jobs, including 2,000 in Colorado, could be saved.
Those are jobs, and that's investment, and those are tax dollars that directly benefit the local community and is energy that's going to be there for decades to come that's coming from right here at home.
The U.S. International Trade Commission ruled that two foreign-owned manufacturers operating in the U.S., Suniva and Solar World, were hurt by cheaper panel and cell imports. The commission will consider remedies at a hearing next week that includes establishing a price floor and tariffs. According to a census by the Solar Foundation, last year over 260,000 people had solar jobs, and employment has tripled since 2010.
That was Eric Galatis reporting. So-called anchor institutions, organizations like hospitals and universities that have developed deep ties in their communities, are finding new ways to improve local economies and create opportunities for more low-income residents. I'm Eric Tegedoff for Public News Service, member and listener supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.
With Puerto
Rico walloped by a hurricane and North Korea threatening nuclear war, President Donald Trump has taken time to lob criticisms at NFL players for kneeling during the national anthem, ratcheting up controversy that has now enveloped multiple professional sports. At a rally last Friday night in Alabama, Trump declared that NFL owners should fire players who kneel for the national anthem, referring to the recent trend of players that have been doing so ever since former San Francisco 49ers quarterback Colin Kaepernick knelt for the anthem last year, citing, quote, "I am not going to stand up to show pride in a flag for a country that oppresses black people and people of color as his reason for doing so." Across the league on Sunday, the NFL's game day, more players protested Trump's comments by kneeling during the national anthem, others joining hands in solidarity. In some cases, owners and even entire teams supported the protests, though others dissented. Some teams regretted their actions, however. The Pittsburgh Steelers stayed in the locker room during the anthem of their game at Soldier Field in Chicago, but quarterback Ben Roethlisberger says it was the wrong decision to make. He wrote on his website on Monday, quote, "I was unable to sleep last night and want to share my thoughts and feelings on our team's decision to remain in the tunnel for the national anthem yesterday. The idea was to be unified as a team when so much attention is paid to things dividing our country, but I wish we approached it differently. We did not want to appear divided on the sideline, with some standing and some kneeling or sitting. As a team, it was not a protest of the flag or the anthem. I personally don't believe the anthem is ever the time to make any type of protest. For me, and many others on my team and around the league, it is a tribute to those who commit to serve and protect our country, current and past, especially the ones that made the ultimate sacrifice. I appreciate the unique diversity in my team and throughout the league and completely support the call for social change and the pursuit of true equality. Moving forward, I hope standing for the anthem shows solidarity as a nation, that we stand united in respect for the people on the front lines, protecting our freedom and keeping us safe. God bless those men and women, end quote. Steelers left tackle Alejandro Villanueva, a former Army Ranger, was the only player to go out onto the sideline and stand during the anthem, as was New England Patriots long snapper, Granite Hills High School graduate, and El Cajon native Joe Cardona, who was also an active naval officer. Villanueva said he regretted his decision at a press conference on Monday. Unfortunately, I threw my teammates under the bus unintentionally. Villanueva did say that it does not matter to him if teammates kneel or sit during the national anthem. Quote, people that are taking a knee are not saying anything negative about the military. They're not saying anything negative about the flag. They're just trying to protest the fact that there are some injustices in America. End quote. Also on Wednesday, Colorado Christian University, a Division II school, banned kneeling during the national anthem at sporting events. Institute head Jeff Hunt said, unfortunately, refusing to stand during the national anthem dilutes the message of the protesters and portrays disrespect towards our country, all who are serving it, and our veterans. But University of Michigan head football coach Jim Harbaugh called Trump's comments ridiculous and that he respects his players' right to kneel. Dallas Cowboys owner Jerry Jones, who has previously spoken out against player protests, took a knee and linked arms with players on Sunday, but reneged on Wednesday after Trump tweeted that he, quote, spoke to Jones, and that moving forward, all players will stand for the anthem. Not all owners are on Trump's side. Patriots owner, chairman, and CEO Robert Kraft, who is a friend of Trump, released a statement on Patriots.com on Sunday, quote, I am deeply disappointed by the tone of the comments made by the president on Friday. I am proud to be associated with so many players who made such tremendous contributions in positively impacting our communities. Their efforts, both on and off the field, help bring people together and make our communities stronger. There is no greater unifier in this country than sports, and unfortunately, nothing more divisive than politics. I think our political leaders could learn a lot from the lessons of teamwork and the importance of working together toward the common goal. Our players are intelligent, thoughtful, and care deeply about our community, and I support their right to peacefully affect social change and raise awareness in the manner that they feel is most impactful, end quote. It wasn't just NFL players who were bothered by Trump's comments. In an Oakland Athletics game on Saturday night in Oakland, Athletics catcher Bruce Maxwell became the first MLB player to kneel during the anthem. Maxwell, who was born to a military family in Germany, said, quote, the point of my kneeling is not to disrespect our military. It's not to disrespect our constitution. It's not to disrespect this country. My hand over my heart symbolizes the fact that I am and I'll forever be an American citizen, and I'm more than grateful to be here. But my kneeling is what is getting the attention because I'm kneeling for the people that don't have a voice. And this goes beyond the black community, and this goes beyond the Hispanic community, because right now we're having an indifference and a racial divide in all types of people. It's being practiced from the highest power that we have in this country, and it's basically saying that it's okay to treat people differently. My kneeling, the way I did it, was to symbolize that I'm kneeling for a cause, but I'm in no way or form disrespecting my country or my flag, end quote. Trump's comments made major waves in another African-American-dominated sports league, the NBA. The Golden State Warriors, the 2017 NBA champions, and more specifically, MVP point guard Steph Curry, refused Trump's invitation to the White House, a time-honored tradition with championship teams in sports, which prompted Trump to tweet, quote, "Going to the White House is considered a great honor for a championship team. Stephen Curry is hesitating. Therefore, invitation is withdrawn," end quote, on Saturday. While the NFL players made their protests on the field, the NBA players took to social media and the podium, as Monday marked the media days for many NBA teams as a new season is set to begin next month. Cleveland Cavaliers star forward LeBron James tweeted indirectly at Trump, quote, "You bum, at Stephen Curry 30 already said he ain't going, so therefore ain't no invite. Going to White House was a great honor until you showed up," end quote. Chicago Bulls center Robin Lopez tweeted, quote, "It's okay at Warriors. In a few months, at real Donald Trump probably won't be able to visit the White House either," end quote. Washington Wizards guard Bradley Beal called Trump a, quote, "clown," while Toronto Raptors guard DeMar DeRozan called the president a, quote, "so-called leader." The only professional sports league not to be affected by Trump's comments is the National Hockey League, where the put your head down and do as you're told hockey culture has pressured the Stanley Cup champion Pittsburgh Penguins to accept Trump's invitation to the White House. Penguins captain Sidney Crosby, a native of Canada, said, quote, "I still feel like we look at it as an opportunity," Crosby told the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette on Sunday following morning skate at the UPMC Lemieux Sports Complex. "We respect the office of the White House." The Penguins released a statement, quote, "The Pittsburgh Penguins respect the institution of the Office of the President and the long tradition of championship teams visiting the White House. We attended White House ceremonies after previous championships, touring the historic building, and visiting briefly with Presidents George H.W. Bush and Barack Obama, and have accepted an invitation to attend again this year. Any agreement or disagreement with the president's politics, policies, or agenda can be expressed in other ways. However, we very much respect the rights of other individuals and groups to express themselves as they see fit," end quote. The announcements have caused backlash. On the Reddit subreddit rhockey, a thread with a link from a satirical newspaper was posted on Monday that reads, "Doctors concerned Sidney Crosby has sustained another concussion after he accepts invitation to Trump White House, making light of Crosby's painful history of concussions on the ice." The thread has now been locked by moderators. The NHL hasn't been all silent, however. Tampa Bay Lightning right winger JT Brown, who is African-American, received threatening tweets on Twitter on Monday from a user named @Johnny17530. Penguins head coach Mike Sullivan said the team's decision to visit the White House is, quote, "politics aside," and league commissioner Gary Bettman in May said players should be, quote, "apolitical on the job and be political," quote, "on their own time," again reinforcing the silence that permeates hockey culture. The only sport to come out and at least a little bit of support of Trump's comments was NASCAR. No racers took a knee during the anthem at a race over the weekend at New Hampshire Motor Speedway. Steve O'Donnell, executive vice president and chief racing development officer of NASCAR, said Monday that NASCAR has always supported the country and the flag, but welcomes other points of view. Quote, "If you look at our history, we've always, as a sport, demonstrated a respect for the American flag and the freedoms it represents," O'Donnell said. "We celebrate the servicemen and women that have sacrificed to be a part of that. From our standpoint, we view ourselves as a sport. We want to continue to celebrate the flag but respect others' opinions. Going forward, I think that's where we stand. We hope people can contribute or look at NASCAR as something to tune into on a Sunday and enjoy a sporting event." NASCAR also released a statement on Monday, quote, "Sports are a unifying influence in our society, bringing people of differing backgrounds and beliefs together. Our respect for the national anthem has always been a hallmark of our pre-race events. Thanks to the sacrifices of many, we live in a country of unparalleled freedoms and countless liberties, including the right to peacefully express one's opinion," end quote. Dale Earnhardt Jr. also tweeted, quote, all Americans are granted rights to peaceful protests. Those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable, JFK, end quote. But one thing is certain, Trump aimed to drive a country apart, but instead is bringing athletes across all sports and teams together. In the words of Warriors head coach Steve Kerr, respectfully, Mr. Trump, the point is this. You're the president. You represent all of us. Don't divide us. Bring us together. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Liz Albert.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, in the heart of San Diego's East County.
We're on the road in East County, visiting some amazing towns and meeting some incredible people across our region. Welcome to another adventure on East County Magazine's On the Road.
This is Hayden Parsley, on the road in Hacumba Hot Springs for East County Magazine. You can take a trip into California's past at the Desert View Tower, a quirky and whimsical relic of the past that is still open to the public here in San Diego's East County. Located just off Interstate 8 at the Incapa exit, the tower is poised on a rocky overlook surrounded by desert on all sides. Built in the 1920s by Bert Vaughn, a real estate tycoon who owned much of Hacumba, this 70-foot watchtower has become a tourist attraction and a local landmark on the outskirts of the small town known as Hacumba Hot Springs. Originally built to commemorate the area's rough pre-highway history, the tower houses a small museum filled with artifacts and oddities of California's history, including our region's Native American, Spanish, and pioneer past. The top floor of the tower is an observation deck, with a coin-fed telescope that provides a breathtaking view of Imperial Valley and the Anza-Borrego Desert, though now somewhat marred by a wind farm. In 1950, a gift shop was added around the base of the tower. The shop still operates today and is filled with an eclectic mix of items such as geodes, gems and minerals, vintage postcards, historic and travel books on our region, arts and crafts items such as handmade Tecate tiles, onyx bookends, musical instruments, carved animal sculptures, and more. Roaming this area of the tower are the owner's many friendly dogs that add to the rustic charm of the location. You can also get a workout pumping a player piano while listening to old-time tunes. While I was there, the wind was gusting. It was a bit chilly and I wished I had a better coat when I reached the top. The owner says this is atypical though and that it is warm and sunny most days. The proprietor, Ben Schultz, has many colorful stories on East County's history, culture, and colorful characters, having operated the site for many years. Boulder Park at the Desert View Tower was created in 1933 by an unemployed engineer, Merle Ratcliffe, who was out of work during the Great Depression. He sculpted reptiles and fanciful animals out of the huge stone boulders. I didn't get a chance to tour these, which will be an adventure for another time.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.